The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome back to The Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein. Filling in for Mr. Monson this afternoon. A lot of news going on about the massive police exodus leaving the department, what they're calling it. A lot of news about what's going on with that gentleman. Don't necessarily want to call him a gentleman, but that guy, the criminal who lit that police car on fire. All that and more coming up next with Mr. John Curley. Let's get to the big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
Ladies and gentlemen, world famous Mr. John Curley, how are you, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Stein, you don't have to do that. You don't blow smoke saying I'm world famous. I'm helping out because I can hear you struggling for the great Dory Monson. Where is Dory, by the way? Does anybody know?
I have no idea. The last time I talked to Dory was months ago. And
I wish that guy would make news every once in a while.
Last time
All
I
right, Stein, let's
Monson.
Go. Let's go.
Yeah, thank
let's
you.
Talk.
That's, ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. John Curley throwing me right under the bus before your eyes and making this more awkward than it ever needed to be. Thank you for that.
Not only
sir.
Are you under the bus, I drove the bus over you. Sean put you in the position I needed you to be in, and that's the way we're going to roll over you for the next 20 minutes because I'm trying to prep for my show, but I'm doing this as a favor to you and to Nicole to get on and try my theories out on you guys first.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I truly, you know, as the fill-in guy, it's always great when the guy who has the job comes in and just steps right on the back of your neck and goes, "Hey, buddy, how you like that? How you like that one, Jack Stein?"
Here we go, Stein.
Jack Stein guy. John Curley, what are you thinking about this? What are you thinking about this? Seattle police officers leaving the department in mass exodus. So about 118 Seattle police officers separated from the department. They told Jason Rantz about it. We talked to him about it a couple hours ago. He's up in arms about it. What say you, sir? Are you for it or against it?
I mean, is anybody shocked by any of this? Seriously, I know that one of the council members, I think Mosqueda, was like, "Well, hold on, you know, let's look at these numbers. There's 800,000 911 calls that come into the city. We're gonna repurpose, reimagine how police are doing their jobs. We might not even need 1,400." So she's trying to say you don't need it. When I was a kid growing up, there was a restaurant that we never went to. And I said, "Why don't we go there, Dad?" "I don't want to go there. We're not going to go there." And we used to drive right by it all the time. One day, Jack, there was a sign out front that said, "Due to your poor patronage, we are closed." So they basically blamed it on us that they were closed. Well, they served crappy food. So the big sign blaming us for the fact that nobody went to their restaurant. So there was obviously some sort of communication problem. They didn't realize that nobody wanted their food, and therefore they go out of business. This is an upstream problem in the city of Seattle that has been brewing for a long time. And now finally, the chickens come home to roost, and the chickens leave and go to Federal Way. They go to Edmonds. They go to the state police. They walk away. The saddest part of this story, Jack, will be like, say, 4 years from now. The police are gone, crime is up, taxes are up, and the people that are most hurt by this are poor, black, and minority communities where most of the crime is occurring. They are most often victims, and the police are unable to do anything about it. It's like the scene from Charles Dickens that tell me, spirits, that these are not the things to happen, right? And Scrooge, these will be the things that will have this. I'm showing you what Christmas future will look like unless you do something about it. There is no way this feckless mayor and the rest of these people who are in the city council are able to see what the future holds for the people they say they are most concerned about.
Well, they could. I mean, you could just open any kind of history book of any kind. You just scroll through it a little bit, go back about 25 years, and look at what happened to Camden, New Jersey, when they said, "Well, we don't have the money for a police department, so let's outsource it. Let's do it from the next county over, and let's just figure it out from there." And then you can look at what happened to Camden in a very brief period of time, to the point where now they have to outsource everything. In fact, there were places in Camden, New Jersey, where the police wouldn't even go, even though they were paid to be on call, much like how Jack Stein is right now, and having John Curley totally throw him under the bus. They would not go to these certain places. So I wonder if, in an effort to be really woke and really brave and really spectacular, people on the city council and the mayor are saying, "This is the direction we're going to go in," But will they still be there 4 years from now, 8 years from now, when everything hits the fan? Are they going to reap what they sow?
No. Most people that make up rules and laws, that doesn't really apply to them. But if you were to go into the city, and in most surveys I've seen, in most cities, when you say to people in minority and sometimes poor communities, they're not always the same, do you want more police or less? Overwhelmingly, the answer is more. And right now in Baltimore, they have said, listen, things are really bad. We need more police. We don't want police to come in and beat us up, but we need more police. It's really simple. The people that are committing the crimes prey upon the innocent. And if there are no police, there is crime. So the sad thing is, you have the woke members of the city council that have this strange, weird cancer that runs through their body, that there's this thing called systemic racism, and they need to eliminate it wherever it is, and they believe it's coming from the police department, so they squash that out. And then what happens is, they're so biased with this systemic racism idea, they don't even see the forest for the trees, because then the people that are really hurt, again, are the people, the victims of the crimes. And it doesn't matter. They'll continue to think, well, let's spend $100 million on this organization. We'll give some to this organization and this organization. When really, it's the upstream problem. You don't have police in order to be able to catch the bad guys or stop the bad guys from thinking about committing crimes. It's as simple as that. I watched Joe Biden's 1993 speech from the floor of the Senate, which he kept yielding three more minutes of time to himself. It was weird. But he basically made a speech that any conservative would now blush at, which was basically, look, we don't care why you are committing the crimes. We don't care that your mom didn't love you enough or there wasn't a social program for you. We don't care why you are the way you are. You're about to hit my mom over the head with a lead pipe or beat up my son, and we're going to take you and we're going to get you off the streets and we're going to put you in jail. That was Joe Biden, 1993.
Pretty tough on crime, Joe Biden was at the time.
I
was thinking about how there is a problem in the police department, John Curley, and hear me out on this.
Oh, yeah.
There is a massive problem within the police department, and that is that when you take money away from the police department, all of a sudden they don't have the funds and the resources to possibly expand and get more social workers and more mental health experts who are kind of sort of like police. This is my overall idea with how we quote-unquote reform policing. You give them more money so they can open up a chapter of social workers and of mental health experts, and they get the fun police vest and they get all that other kind of stuff, but they're not really cops. Okay. But they do show up when, let's say there's a couple fighting in the street and it's nonviolent, but someone's got to be present for that. Those people, boom, they show up. There's some guy who's dissolving into the sidewalk like it's a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and he's becoming one with the city of Seattle. They go, mm-hmm. Boom. How can we help this guy with this severe mental health issue? I think the other problem is that there's nowhere to put people who are currently living in trash cans and who are talking to the aliens who live in the trees. There's nowhere to take those people and say,
hey, there's a lot of our listeners. Wait a minute, Stein. I know you're down there in hoity-toity California. It's a lot of our Cairo Radio listeners, and they need roofs, and they need hair replacement, and they need new teeth. Go ahead.
And then they have to communicate with the bees who are living inside of their beard. What did you think about this incident that happened just yesterday with the gentleman who – I keep saying gentleman. I don't want to call
this
guy a gentleman.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, the gentleman that threw the flaming log into the police car.
He was wearing a monocle and a –
Right. I say, sir, I have this flaming log, and I was thinking of throwing it into your car and then hoping you would discharge your weapon directly in my position. That guy, that's just classic. He's obviously somebody who's got some sort of mental problems, and he throws it at a – but besides, don't forget, it's okay to punch a Nazi, and all cops are bastards. So throw the flaming log into the car. Or when one of our city council members stood there while somebody on a bullhorn was explaining to the police officer how to place the gun under his chin and kill himself, and the city council member said nothing. Oh, you never saw this video? Oh, it's classic. You got to turn to Jason Rantz. He plays that all the time. But the thing is, the police are leaving because the police are not appreciated. If you're not appreciated, you'll go somewhere else. And believe me, right now, it's a buyer's market, and these police are leaving. It cost about $1 million to train one police officer. About $1 million. For the first 2 years, they're good for absolutely nothing. They make a tremendous amount of mistakes, and the guy that's working with them or the woman that's working with them helps them every step of the way. The city is losing law enforcement, so who wins? The criminals will win, and who loses? The victims of those crimes. And this will be the case in the city of Seattle, but we will be told later on it's somehow systemic racism as we see crime continue to skyrocket, police continue to leave, tax base goes down, so taxes go up on everybody else. And who benefits from this, Jack Stein? It's all the suburban areas on the outside of Seattle that will benefit.
You're listening to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Mr. Dory Monson this afternoon. World famous John Curley of the Tom and Curley Show. Also, from what I was reading, Mr. John Curley, a motivational speaker, television talent.
Yeah, talent.
Master of the Rubik's Cube and chess, I was reading about, that you have a skill set that involves Rubik's Cubes, juggling
that
and whatnot.
No. Juggling, yes. Growing a beard in 3 days, yes. No, balloon animals, not the Rubik's Cube. Not the balloon animals. I can make Snoopy on a unicycle juggling three balls in less than 2 minutes.
Jack, you got to ask him about the ping pong balls, though. That's brilliant.
Oh, what's the deal with the ping pong? What are you doing with the ping pong balls?
That is Sean trying to make some sort of weird sexual thing. Is that what you're doing in there, Sean?
With I don't
the
know
ping
what you're
pong
talking
balls?
About, Jack.
I don't know what you're talking. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I'll see you upstairs in human resources.
Speaking of human resources, John Curley, I pulled this story for you. I wanted to get your opinion on this because I have strong thoughts and opinions on this. But I thought, who better than major market talent John Curley than to come on?
Come on, Jack.
And disseminate his wisdom about this particular topic. So in Vermont, it's going to be the first state requiring secondary schools to give out free condoms. And you might say to yourself, well, for high school students, 17, 18 years old, that makes some sense, right? Kids are going to go out and they're going to be kids, particularly if they don't have parents who say, hey, you know, wait till you're married, or you know, they're not part of a religious institution, something like that. However, I was looking at this, and in Vermont, they're saying that children as young as 12 or 13 can go in and get these without parent approval or parent knowledge. They can just walk right in, grab a couple condoms, walk right out. And I thought, well, that at this point, that's disturbing, right? That's pretty gross. And I understand the argument. People say, well, we have fire extinguishers in buildings because we want to not prevent fire or not start fires, but we want to put them out. It's the same reason why we put condoms all over the place. What say you, John Curley?
Well, I knew you were going to bring this up, Jack. So I looked at the numbers. This is in Vermont, teen birth declining 78% from 1991 to 2018. 2016, 182 live births. These are to teenagers 18 to 19. And then I looked at the numbers, and what I found is very few kids that are in elementary school are having sex. Those that are having sex, it's a small percentage. Are they using condoms? No. But they have a greater percentage of teenagers between eighth grade and the younger contemplating or attempting to commit suicide. It's about 6%. I think they should probably do more for kids with mental illness than possibly just handing out condoms and giving them mixed signals. And besides, most guys take the condoms. If I was in seventh grade, I'd take the condom, I would fill it up with water, and I would throw it at my friend. Would you not be throwing condoms as balloons or turning them into Snoopy juggling three balls on a unicycle? Let me tell you, a sixth grade boy is, or a, whatever the grade is that they're giving these, they're not using them. In fact, even teen sex, this is crazy. Teen sex is the lowest it has ever been. Teenagers are having less and less sex. 41% of teenagers are saying they're having sex. You know, there's probably some in there that are lying. Teenagers don't have as much sex as they used to have.
Yeah, that's true. According to this, it's found that only I'm looking at the statistic, only about 2% in middle school, 7% high school. I mean, that seems pretty low comparatively. I ask you again, John Curley, though, if you do think about like this, let's just throw this out there. There is a certain percentage of kids that are going to go and they're going to engage in this activity.
Yeah.
Gross activity. They're going to go and they're going to do that. Should that not be available to them if they so choose to do it, particularly if they're 17, 18 years old and they're going to be should we not be protecting these kind the children at these age? Should we not have that available for them? But underneath that, not so much.
Should the school be handing them out to eighth graders? I think there are 13-year-olds. There's probably a certain age where all of a sudden the conversation with your kid is, are you sexually active? And the girl says yes, and then, okay, so we're going to get you on the pill. So I don't know what the percentage is. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I remember having those conversations with my kids, and it's like, look, we're going to put you on the pill because you don't want to get pregnant. It's a life-changing experience that is not going to necessarily be positive. You can't trust the boy, and most boys don't want to wear condoms anyway. They're told they're going to wear condoms, but they don't. They carry them around to show off to their friends and then eventually turn into Snoopy juggling on a unicycle.
That reminds me, it's funny you mentioned that, John Carley, because when I was in middle school, we did have a sexual education class, and they did pass out condoms for us to not take with us, but we were supposed to use them in class and, you know, expand mm-hmm. them and, you know, joke around with them. But what my friend Justin Kate did is he took it to the sink in the bathroom, and he filled it up with water, and then he kind of did it like a, what are those things where it's like a, what David killed Goliath with, like the, kind of like a,
The
sling, thank you. He spun it really fast, and then he threw it up and over the library, and it landed right in the middle of where everybody ate lunch. Blew up everywhere. Nice. And we just laughed and laughed and laughed.
There you go.
And I didn't see another one of those until I was probably 18 years old. wasn't even a part of my life whatsoever.
I have a great story, but I think it's a little blue for 2:20 in the afternoon.
Yeah,
so,
probably is, sir.
I'll save it for 5:15.
John Curley, what do we have to look forward to on the Tom and Curley show coming up?
Oh, more of this hijinks that we do between 3 and 7. Tom and I are going to be talking the same thing you talked about as well, the Seattle Police Department. And then we're going to talk about the debate, or whatever that thing was supposed to be, a town hall from last night, where Savannah Guthrie was able to fact-check the president live, and Joe Biden had softball questions thrown at him. We got a whole bunch of different stuff we're going to take care of. But, Jack, let me tell you, as a Cairo Radio guy, a Cairo Radio listener, I appreciate that when they ask you to be on, you're there no matter what you're doing. Thanks for helping out.
Anytime, buddy. And my hope for you is that you do not throw Tom under the bus this afternoon as you did for me.
That would not be a show for me, Jack. Goodbye.
Thank you very much. We're listening to the Dory Monson show. We got to take a really quick break when we get back. We're going to be covering more about that interview between President Trump and Savannah Guthrie. Be right back after this. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Mr. Dory Monson. Big seat to fill, big shoes to try to fill for the day. I think I've done a pretty good job, if I do say so. Not as good, certainly not as good, but hopefully, you know, you can only hope to be able to fill the shoes ever so slightly. So I wanted to go back to the town halls last night, because I was thinking during the break just now that we could have had a presidential debate last night. Could have had one easily. We could have had a town hall debate easily. Could have had the two gentlemen in the same room. But what restricted that? What prevented that from happening? Well, it was the commission, the debate commission. And they said, well, we're not going to do it because of this. And they said, well, do a Zoom room. And then Trump said, no, I won't do that. And then Biden said, well, I won't do a Zoom room either. So now we ended up with this weird parallel universe in which Joe Biden is in one corner. Donald Trump is in the other corner. Joe Biden is getting handheld through an interview, not really any very difficult questions, and Donald Trump is getting just absolutely grilled, absolutely hammered. And then what are people talking about today? What's the big takeaway from that? Well, there was a woman who was sitting behind Donald Trump at NBC, and she was nodding. She was nodding in agreement with the president. And this simply cannot happen, according to some people. According to some people, they are accusing it of being conspiratorial, that this woman was a plant. Other people are saying, how dare NBC allow a Trump plant to share the screen with him to reinforce his message, they're saying. I don't want to give out these people who tweeted this. I don't want to give out their handle. But one man tweeted out, the woman nodding behind Trump is my new least favorite human being. Someone else said, my new nemesis is the woman behind Trump who keeps nodding every time he lies. So I may disagree with people often in politics. I may disagree with certain politicians. Let's just pull one out of a hat. Let's say Bernie Sanders. I may disagree with Bernie Sanders on a lot of things. But he may say something that I agree with. Let's say he says the cost of prescriptions is too high. I might nod my head in agreement. Yep. Yep. Now, he and I may differ on how to fix that, but I may nod my head in agreement, go, yep, he's exactly right about that. So we've become so Trump derangement syndrome is in such high, it's just shifted to such a high gear that at this point, a woman in the background not going, yeah, yeah, no, I agree with him, is to be hated. She's to be called a nemesis. And when people talk about Trump derangement syndrome, I am well aware that this is a real thing because one of my best friends in the world has this. My very good friend Billy Sunshine has the worst case of Trump derangement syndrome I've ever seen. It is so bad that he and I were doing a radio show together. We were doing a show, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. And I read a story about how Donald Trump had passed the PACT Act, which was an act that made it a federal crime to abuse an animal in all 50 states. And I thought, wow, what a hero to animals. I thought it was a story that everybody could get on board with. And my friend Billy Sunshine blew a gasket at the idea that Donald Trump could ever do anything nice. So we're at this point, I guess, in society, where even when there's just someone peripherally around President Trump who is in agreement with him, they are a nemesis and they are the least favorite human being you could come across. And that's pretty childish. A lot of childish. Like, I'm not a Trump guy, admittedly. I'm in no way, shape, or form a Trump guy. I'm not bros with President Trump in any way, shape, or form. He's a president. Presidents deserve praise. They deserve criticism. There's no reason to do this thing where if someone agrees with someone that you don't like, all of a sudden they become an enemy. All of a sudden they become someone to be hated. I just don't get it. However, going back to the interview, there was another heated exchange between President Trump and Savannah Guthrie, where it was over tests and spreading of COVID-19 and how responsible he was for it. Here's audio of President Trump saying that he did, or the question was asked, did he take a test for COVID-19 on the day of the debate?
I had no problem before.
Did you test the day afterwards. Of the debate?
I don't know. I don't even remember. I test all the time. But I can tell you this. After the debate, like, I guess a day or so, I think it was Thursday evening, maybe even late Thursday evening, I tested positive. That's when I first found out
about it. Back to the debate, because the debate commission's rules, it was the honor system, would be that you would come with a negative test. You say you don't know if you got a test on the day of the debate?
I had no problem. Again, the doctors do it. I don't ask them. I test all the time. And they,
did you take a test, though, on the day of the debate?
You know, if you ask the doctor, they give you a perfect answer. But they take a test, and I leave, and I go about
my
business.
Did you take a test on the day of the debate, I guess, is the bottom line?
I probably did, and I took a test the day before, and I was always in great shape. And I was in great shape for the debate. And it was only after the debate, like a period of time after the debate, that I said, that's interesting, and they took a test, and it tested positive.
So just to button it up, do you take a test every single day?
No, but I take a lot of tests.
That is a ridiculous exchange from Savannah Guthrie. I mean, just why does it matter? Why does it matter if he took a test exactly that day? He said, well, I took it the day before. I might have taken it that day. I don't remember, but I took it the day before. End of story. Boom. There you go. But I don't think that the goal is to try to prove anything for him. I don't think it's that Savannah Guthrie's not trying to absolve Trump of any blame. She's actually trying to ramp it up. She's actually trying to say, no, you should have been more responsible. But even then, I believe I had COVID-19. I'm about 90% positive I did because I had all of these symptoms. And I got tested many, many times. If you were to ask me, do you remember getting tested? It all seems like one test. It all seems like one kind of a blur. I was sick at the time, admittedly. But if you were to ask me, well, Jack Stein, how many times did you get tested? Well, you could ask my doctor exactly the answer that Trump gave. You could ask my doctor. They'll give you a perfect answer. I don't know personally. Boom. There you go. End of story. She just hammered him. Just absolutely took him to task on everything that he said. In some ways, rightfully so. In other ways, not so much. For example, here is Savannah Guthrie giving it to Donald Trump on his debt and taxes.
I want to say two things. Number one, it's a very small amount of money. Number two, it's very straight. It's very, very straight. But it's a tiny percentage of the worth. Did you ever hear the expression underlevered?
Yeah.
I am extremely underlevered.
Here's the thing. You could clear this up tonight by just releasing your tax returns yourself. I mean, I think people are just wondering.
As you know,
you're
I'm
the
underaudit.
Only...
It turned out that I am
yes,
underaudit.
But the
they
IRS
actually.
Said,
excuse
you are.
Me. No, no. But you
the
accused,
IRS says that doesn't stop you from releasing.
You accused me of not being underaudit previously,
not
and so did
not.
Other people at NBC. And I am under audit. So that was solved. That's good. I am under audit. No person in their right mind would release prior to working out the deal with the IRS. And I'll go a step further. I'm treated very badly by the IRS. They treat me very, very badly. You have people in there from previous administrations. They treat me very badly. But we're under audit. It's very routine in many ways, but we're under audit. They like to change the game, change the rules, do everything. You saw what they did with the Tea Party people. You saw what they did with the religious
group. But to be clear, there is no law or rule that prohibits you from releasing your tax returns.
No, except common sense and intelligence.
If you're someone like me and you're not 100% a Trump dude, and you see how he is treated by the media, and you see how he is treated by people who have a job similar, like I'm technically a journalist, I'm a broadcaster, and I look at that and I say, well, why is all this hate going towards this guy? Why is all this pressure going towards this guy? Now, I would be more understanding if an equal, or maybe even let's give him 75% of what Trump got, you give that to Joe Biden, I would say, okay, well, now we're living in a fair system. But when I compare the two, when I see what's going on, just the fervent anti-Trump push in that clip, it's weird for me to see that. Just as someone who says, hey, you know what? I'm not even in the guy's camp. I'm not registered Republican in any way, shape, or form. I see that and I go, man, that there's something askew within the system where you put that much pressure on somebody and you put that much just tension around that issue. And then I flip over to Joe Biden, and it's like he's having tea with George Stephanopoulos, and they're reminiscing about the good old days when Bill Clinton was in office. And we're sitting around, and we're having a grand old time, nice, casual, best of friends. Couldn't be more, in any way, shape, or form, couldn't be a more pleasant conversation. Go back to Trump. They're heated. She's interrupting him. It's basically a debate between President Trump and Savannah Guthrie. At that point in time, it's not really the town hall that it was supposed to be. And of course, she's getting a lot of praise and she's getting a lot of everyone saying, hey, good job. If George Stephanopoulos had done the same thing to Joe Biden, I would be giving him the same amount of criticism. I would say, dude, you don't conduct yourself like that. If you're just trying to get the answers and stuff like that, he's trying to dodge. It's gross. It's just a gross way to try to get information from somebody. I'm Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Mr. Dory Monson this afternoon. Going to take a quick break, wrap all this up in the next segment. We'll be right back after this. For the last time, I'm Jack Stein. I have filled in for Mr. Monson the last couple of days, and I really do appreciate it very much. I got a very nice email from a listener. It was a young woman, I believe. You know who you are if you're still listening. And it was a very sweet email. She said I did a very fine job. And I appreciate that to no end because it is massive, massive shoes to fill. I would like to say this about the debates. My final thought on the non-debate, let's call it that. We should not have them. We should not have all this pomp and circumstance. We should not do all this stuff where Joe Biden and Donald Trump and some moderator gets there. I think we've seen, particularly in this election, that it is too partisan and it is too heated and there is too many bad actors involved with it. And what we should do, I think, going forward is we schedule 3 2-hour sessions where we take the president and the person who is running against them and we put them in a room. And it's just the two of them. And maybe we have some coffee, maybe a Danish, maybe some Johnny Walker Black Label. And they have to sit in that room for 2 hours and they have to hash and they have to have a conversation. The camera's in that room. It's recorded. Everybody can watch it like it's the Truman Show. Don't get me wrong. We all get to see. But we get to see the true character of an individual as opposed to this standing on a podium and having someone either hand feed them all the answers and all the responses they would need or seeing somebody get berated. I'm tired of that. I just want to see the guy or the lady for that matter. I don't want to do this whole Mr. President, how would you feel? Da, 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 da. And just to give you an example as to why I think this would work. We do have an audio clip that I really, really like, which is where the voter tells President Trump that he has a nice smile. So here's that clip.
Paulette, what's your question?
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
I have to say you have a great smile.
Gotcha.
So, he does. You're so handsome when you smile.
Isn't that great? Isn't that a great clip? Just someone saying, hey, you know, Mr. President, I like the way you smile. It almost is a kind of a human element to that, where we realize that all of this, it's like we snap out of the matrix and we wake up into reality and realizing that we're all just human beings and that someone has a nice smile, happens to be President Trump. I just thought that was such a sweet moment. It did touch me because this election has been so awful and so mean and so corrupt in so many ways. That one particular moment really caught me. And the other clip I wanted to show you was this clip of Joe Biden talking about what happens if he's going to lose. He says that if he loses, he wasn't such a good candidate. Here's that clip.
Mr. Vice President, if you lose, what will that say to you about where America is today?
Well, it could say that I'm a lousy candidate and I didn't do a good job. But I think, I hope that it doesn't say that we are as racially, ethnically, and religiously at odds with one another as it appears.
There are fundamentally human elements in both of those exchanges with the Trump voter and then also with Biden answering that question. That is a very genuine and authentic answer, and it is a beautiful answer. Puts it on himself, takes responsibility for it. Say, I was a lousy candidate. And then he goes on to say, but I hope what it doesn't mean. And it really does resonate with me as someone who looks for that authenticity. I'm addicted to it. I want it. I want to see a real moment from a politician. And I saw it in Donald Trump in that moment. And I saw it from Joe Biden in that clip that we just played. And to show you also just the final clip that we'll go over about this whole debate thing is that Savannah Guthrie asks Donald Trump about his affiliation with QAnon. Now, this is ridiculous. I've made a video about QAnon on my own YouTube channel, Human Genius. And the idea that Donald Trump is responsible for the things that he retweets is very silly. And we get into this massive debate over what he tweets and what he does with his Twitter account. So can we play that clip really quick about Donald Trump responding to the QAnon tweet mess that he's in right now?
Let me ask you about QAnon. It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that. Now, can you just once and for all state that that is completely not true and that disavow QAnon in its entirety?
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that. I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard. But I know nothing about it.
They believe it is
if
a satanic
like
cult run by the deep state.
Study the subject. I'll tell you what I do know about. I know about Antifa, and I know about the radical left, and I know how violent they are and how vicious they are, and I know how they're burning down cities run by Democrats, not run
Republican
by Republicans.
Republican Senator Ben Sasse said, quote, QAnon is nuts, and real leaders call conspiracy theories conspiracy theories.
He may be
Why
right.
not just say it's crazy and not true?
He may be right. I just don't know about QAnon.
You do know.
I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't know.
You Let me ask
me
you another thing.
It. Let's waste a whole show. You start off with white supremacy, I denounce it. You start off with something else, let's go. Keep asking me these questions.
Okay.
Let me just tell you, what I do hear about it is they are very strongly against pedophilia. And I agree with that. I mean, I do.
There you go. Yeah. So the awkward part about that whole exchange, other than the fact that she's talking about QAnon, is that she goes, you do know. And there's something very juvenile in her voice. There's very something kind of adolescent in her voice when it comes across that way. Now, as far as the job that she did, in some ways she did a fine job. In other ways, I say to myself, you should have left that personal aspect out of the whole transaction between you and President Trump. I am Jack Stein. I was filling in for Mr. Dory Monson the last couple of days. I truly do appreciate it very much. Thank you all very much for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure, as per usual. I will see you next time, and thank you very much.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.